Welcome to the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Joe and Ron are self-proclaimed teacher nerds, geeking out on all things education. They are looking to move educational practices out of the 1900s factory worker model to a student-driven classroom full of empathetic, creative, and collaborative students willing to take risks. Join them as they chat with educators from around the world, discussing educational tools, techniques, ideas, policies, and much more. Thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds. And now a word from a sponsor.
In this episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast, Joe and Ron chat with returning guest Jed Derrybury to discuss his book, The Courageous Classroom.
Yeah, so officially, The Courageous Classroom is a deep dive into understanding what happens in our bodies and our minds when we face fear and trauma, when students have to face racism or homophobia or xenophobia, what happens when they deal with microaggressions or abuse at home, and how that affects their learning.
Jed also shares some powerful and personal stories from his own life as a student as well as a teacher. And now, let's get into the show.
Oh, have you heard about the nerds? What's the word? Teacher nerds. You can tweet them out on Twitter. You can find them on the gram. After listening to their podcast, you'd be sitting there like, bam! Trying to take the teaching from one level to the next. Reaching up to Canada and down to Mexico. Gotta go. Teacher nerds. Start the show.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. I'm Ron Nober.
I'm Joe DiPaolo.
And today I am a technology teacher, third grade to eighth grade.
And I teach third grade.
And today, I was really excited there for a second. Today we have a returning guest, Jed Derrybury. Welcome, Jed.
Welcome, man. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here. Like I said, when we were chatting before the show, I have been thinking about y'all all day. So excited to be a return guest on a podcast. I think this is the first time I've ever been a return guest on any podcast.
How could people not invite you back?
I don't know, but I bring value, content, and entertainment.
Personality. I was going to say for sure, personality.
Yes. Yes. I mean, sign me up, people. I love to get on here and chat. It's fun.
We're going to jump right in. We're going to do our two yes mores, one no way. And I got to say, we're kind of doing this just a little bit. This is the 20th of January when we're recording this. So just a little while ago, we had Betty White pass and her 100th birthday just a few days ago. So kind of throw this out in honor of her. And we're doing two TV characters for our two yes mores and one no way.
It's time for two yes more, one no way.
Joe, do you want to go first? We'll have Jed go in the middle, or do you want me to go first?
I can start.
I can't wait to hear these guys. I've been ready for this.
I'll get it going.
All right.
This was a tough one because you talk about TV characters. Come on, where do you go? Well, the first place I went, I took a Star Wars character. Guess what? And I didn't go Star Wars with him. So my first yes, Batman, the animated series, the cartoon, Joker.
Wow. Okay.
Played by Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
Voiced by Mark Hamill, mm-hmm. right? To which I feel that could be one of my top Joker choices of all time. Ooh. So I thought that was very fitting for a first choice. Second choice took a lot of thought. Going where I did with number one, coming in at number two. My first thought was Andy Griffith because I love that. I like the 50s Leave It to Beaver kind of, but mm-hmm. I wasn't a Leave It mm-hmm. to Beaver fan, but right. I like that style. So I was thinking Andy Griffith, and when I was thinking Andy Griffith, I went right to Don Knotts. And when I went to Don Knotts, I was like, oh, remember when Don Knotts was on Scooby-Doo, a character in Scooby-Doo. I'm like, so do I go Scooby-Doo? But I didn't. My number two, Fred Sanford. And the reason being, when Nick at Night came out, I want to say maybe that was the early 90s. I can remember watching Sanford and Son.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I remember constantly my dad would come downstairs and he'd always say, "What are you watching?" I mean, I was probably 12 years old. He's like, "I can't believe you're watching this show. You were born in the wrong era." And just that, you know, I think Red Fox is a great comedian. And my grandfather actually talked to Red Fox at a bar. So I kind of have a, you know, I like Red Fox. So that's my, those are my two yeses, Red Fox or Fred Sanford and the Joker from Animated Batman.
Ron, okay. Let me pause you. Pause you for 1 second. I thought that you were going to say Esther from Sanford and Son, and I was going to shout because that she's a great character. She's a great character.
I wasn't that, you know, who popped into my mind? Grady. Grady okay. popped into my mind. Yep. I didn't even think Esther, and yeah. probably because they always went at it, man.
She wasn't on my list, but when you started talking, she's one of my favorite. Yeah, she's definitely. Oh. Sorry to interrupt you.
Well, no, that's fine. This is what it's all about. Because my number one, Ron's going to hate me, and it's not that I don't like it, but it's Ted Lasso, and you know what?
You're going to get hate mail.
Hey, I got
it's going to. When this airs in the middle of the summer, you are going to get hate mail.
I got thick skin. I could take it and I could dish it out. Ted, it's just, and I've tried, you know, like even the bearded guy, kind of like the bearded guy a little better than Ted Lasso. And I know Ted Lasso's got all the sayings. So, sorry, Ted Lasso's my no
way. Can I confess? I've never even seen one episode of it.
Oh.
I will tell you, I got a subscription to Apple TV just so I could watch it, but I haven't had time to watch it yet. So I'm paying my $5 a month for nothing right now.
Hey, people love it. Ron loves it.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Stacy loves it. I can't. I've tried, and yeah, he's going to be my one no. And, you know, just not that I hate him. I just think that there's so much popularity around that show and that character.
Yeah,
that's my no way,
that.
Ron.
I feel that. Yeah. You
know. All right, Jed, what do you got, man?
So, you know you did research.
So I will tell you, this was incredibly hard for me because I will tell you, as I started making my list, I found out that the people that I didn't like came to mind a lot easier than the ones that I didn't, which was I felt bad. You know, I was like, man, why am I dogging on these people? And it's not the people, it's their character. That and I know I was only supposed to list one, but I'm going to go through them quickly. I had
you're the one pressed on time.
Yes, I know I am. So I'm going to go quickly. Okay. One character that always just annoyed the fool out of me is Ray Romano on Everybody Loves Raymond. I don't like him. It makes me so mad how he treats Deborah so poorly sometimes over his own mother. I'm like, dude, you're married to Deborah. Send your mama back across the street and yeah, I don't know. It just got on my nerves. Second is a character y'all may not be familiar with. I don't know if you watch the show. Do y'all watch The Walking Dead?
No.
Okay, so I'm a big Deadhead. I love Walking Dead. And there's a character on there. His name is Gabriel, and he's a priest. And you think, well, you should love a priest, especially when all the zombies are around, you know? He's the spineless, and I don't like him. Now, he's gotten better as the show goes along, but I didn't like him. Okay. And this last one y'all are both going to know is a couple. It's a couple that I didn't like from a show back in the 90s. The show is Saved by the Bell. And I might get hate mail for this, but I could not stand A.C. Slater and Jesse Spano. I could not stand it. Could not stand it because they were just like, ugh, they were cringe. They were so cringe.
Why? Because they played that perfect.
Oh gosh, I don't know
that perfect role.
Maybe I had some unfinished business with you know high school football jocks from my high school days, and I just took that on out. AC Slater. I don't know. I just did not like them. I don't know. Everybody loved them, and I just couldn't get hold of it. So, okay, enough of the people that I didn't like. Y'all are going to laugh at this one. But Matt and I both agreed that this is one of our favorite characters of all time. And he's very underrated. Waldo Faldo from Family Matters. He is awesome. He was Eddie Winslow's sidekick. He always came in with some kind of dumb line that made you laugh. And do y'all know who that is? Do y'all know who Waldo Faldo is?
Underrated. I don't know if I would call him underrated.
So underrated. Like he was overlooked on that show. He was as good as Steve Urkel if they would have given him a platform. He was.
Though later on. Didn't the later episodes
he did have more of a presence. Yeah. Right? Because what happened is they when they wrote in Urkel to turn to Stefan, you know, in that little machine that he had, they realized they still needed kind of a nerdy character. And so they brought Waldo in more. But anyway, that was my one. And another one, y'all might not know this one either, but remember last time I was on here, I talked about my show 227.
Yeah.
And there was a character on there named Sandra. That was her name. And she'd be like, "Hey, Mary, it's me, Sandra." I loved Sandra so much. She was always dressed to the nines and she would come waddling in, you know, like, "Hey, I'm here," you know. And I just love all the sass that she was. And I don't know, did y'all watch any CNN New Year's Eve by chance?
Yeah.
So she popped in on the show with Anderson Cooper.
Right. Well, right.
Is that Jack Kay, right?
Yeah, Jack Kay. Yeah, she popped in on the show. And I only watched maybe 20 minutes of the whole New Year's Eve thing. And I just happened to see her on the show. So anyway, I have others on my list.
Well, can I tell you something about that? Like when we, even on our first show, Blanche, very influential on me as a little kid.
Yeah.
Jack Kay, very influential on me. And the third one, Peg Bundy.
Yes. Yes.
And all three of them are like the same. Like you, Jed, you did it like that. That whole. Yeah.
I love it. So let me put a disclaimer too on the ones that I like. Obviously, all of the Golden Girls are at the top of my list. That goes without saying. Anybody who knows me knows that. Let me quick give some honorable mentions. Jim Halpert from The Office.
Oh yeah, yeah, yes.
Olivia Benson, Law and Order.
Okay. She's not my favorite.
I love her. I'm obsessed. I've watched 22 seasons straight through. I'm still working my way through. Y'all might not know this character, Violet Crawley. She's the Dowager Countess from Downton Abbey.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's a badass. She's a badass, and I want to be her. And in a relatively new show, characters that I've fallen in love with, Otis and Eric from the show Sex Education. If you've not seen that, check out that show on Netflix. It's really good. Two high school characters, and I love them. They're great. Okay, I'm going to stop talking because I want to hear the rest of them. Ron, let's hear it.
All right, so Joe, I'm starting off Ted Lasso.
Knew it.
One of my new favorite. We're like oil and water sometimes with this whole.
That's what makes it work. That's it.
Right. Just funny, positive, silly, like just things aren't going the way. Just positive, you know, and it's a show where like I smile through the whole show. And like it was one of those almost like The Office where there's, the last season that we watched and it was over, I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, this is what we normally do at this night to watch the. Mm-hmm. So that's my first one. Second one is a series that I've watched probably start to finish 4 to 5 times and could watch it again easily is Walter White in Breaking Bad.
That's exactly what Matt said. Yep.
The character development and change in him is probably one of the best character developments and change in any character I've ever seen. Agreed. In any show. Agreed. He goes from being this like, you know, meek and mild guy, you know, nerdy teacher.
He's a teacher nerd.
Hey, wait a minute, Ron.
Yeah.
Then he goes to a bad drug kingpin, like there's no crazier turnaround.
You're right about that. You're definitely right about that. I agree.
You know, and they had some other great characters, but you know, that's definitely he's top of my list. And then the last one is, I think all of our no's can get some mail, some hate mail for them. Any character, doesn't matter who it is, from Friends.
Ooh.
Okay, I agree.
There's not one character on there.
Well, wait, Tribbiani? Joey Tribbiani? You don't like Joey?
No,
come on.
No Chandler.
It's funny that you said that. I actually had a Friends character on my dislike list too. and that was Monica. I didn't really care for her. She kind of got on my nerves. The rest of them I could handle, but she bothered me a little bit.
Just could not.
But we're both going to get emails about that.
Yeah,
oh, that's the best show ever.
No, Joe, definitely. With Ted Lasso's just too new and too popular. Yeah. You're definitely getting some mail.
Yeah, but you know, I was thinking about
Send all your email to Teacher Nerds. What is it?
At Gmail, care of Joe.
At Gmail, and please in the care subject line, just put Joe.
I was thinking Ted Lasso. I was thinking Breaking Bad too. Another show I didn't get into, or like The Walking Dead. But I thought, you know what? Let's go Ted Lasso because that's here and now.
Yeah, that is here and now.
Let's stir the pot.
Yeah, you stirred it. You stirred it, and you got it. Wow.
All right.
Well, that was fun. I love that. I'm serious. I've been thinking about it all day. Like you see, I had my little notepad here.
You have to, right? I mean, in order to put any thought into things, when it comes to
consider it,
those like, topics.
Like I knew that anybody who knows me would expect me to say the Golden Girls, you know, so I was trying to come up with something beyond that because that's a given.
Show the true depth.
I'm sitting here. It's you know what? I didn't even think about cartoons, but I'll tell you a cartoon character that's one of my favorite is Arthur. I am obsessed with Arthur. He played a big part of my classroom when I was teaching second grade.
I'm thinking of something else. Yeah.
Arthur, you know,
how'd you bring him into your class?
Yeah. So he's got a whole series of books. Arthur, it started with a book, children's book, Arthur, Mark Brown there. He's probably got, I don't know, 50, 60 books, on Arthur and his little sister, D.W. The teacher in the series was named Mr. Ratburn. And just, I think it was last year, year before, they allowed Mr. Ratburn to finally get married. And he married a man. Mr. Ratburn was gay all this time. And I loved it. So we used to have something called Arthur's Reading Club in my classroom. And we celebrated and watched the videos of Arthur and wrote letters to Arthur. One time, Mark Brown actually, the Arthur actually called in and chatted with my students over the phone. I sent him an email and he said, yeah, I'll call in.
It was on PBS, wasn't it? A cartoon?
Yeah,
a
PBS show. Yeah.
Okay. Huh.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I guess I really am a teacher nerd. I'm 40, almost 44, and I got a little Arthur doll sitting in my home office here. But when I was little, people used to say that we looked alike because he had a round face and I have a round face and both wore glasses.
Hey.
If only my ears were on top here. We'll see.
There could be worse things that people say you look like, right?
Oh, Eddie Munster was another one that I used to get. Yeah.
Childhood days are so fun.
Yeah, right.
Fun to reminisce.
They are, R&D.
And now we're going to take a little break, but we'll be back in a moment. Many of today's students aspire to be the next TikTok or YouTube star, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Successful and professional creators have a solid foundation of essential skills like communication, creativity, and critical thinking, to name a few. But learning these essential skills has been easier said than done until now. Introducing Tracked. Tracked has intertwined project-based learning's best practices with content conventions from TikTok, Snapchat, and YouTube to create a fun, educational experience to empower students to become creators on Tracked. By developing their own learning path on Tracked, students of every level have the opportunity to select a topic of interest and create a dynamic learning experience through a series of project-based learning activities designed to help them become effective creators. From researching and outlining to scripting, recording, editing, and presenting to their peers, your students can develop 21st century skills employers are looking for most by creating their own class on Tracked. And with built-in awards and a clear path to becoming a paid creator, teachers can easily motivate students to turn their YouTube and TikTok star aspirations into reality by being a published paid partner on Tracked. Tracked has even thought of safety. Tracked is COPPA, FERPA, and CCPA compliant, and uses a three-tiered approach to moderation: verified adult account holders only, technology detection and blocking, and human moderation. Best of all, Tracked is free forever for teachers who sign up at teach.tracked.app and use the access code TEACHERNERDS. And remember, that's nerds with a Z. Sign up for Tracked now. And now back to the show.
All Okay, I'm here.
Yeah. So I mean, you said you're now not officially like in the classroom as a teacher anymore. So can you just remind our listeners like what you do now?
I'm not officially in an elementary classroom. I am in a college classroom. This semester I teach four courses. I have three sections of children's literature and one section of fine arts in the elementary curriculum. The children's lit class is obviously, you know, I teach students how to incorporate children's literature into every aspect of what they do across the curriculum, across the grade levels. People in my classes are early childhood, they are secondary, they're elementary, they're library students, they're speech language pathologists, and I teach them the ins and outs of all children's literature and the fine arts in the curriculum. I teach them what the meaning of fine arts integration is. So a lot of times teachers think that fine arts integration is that I'm going to teach the same old way I've been teaching and then do a fun little art project at the end. But it's actually where the art and the content mesh together. And the analogy I use in my class, I don't know if y'all know anything about sweet tea where you're from, but sweet tea is not brewing the tea and then adding a little pack of sugar to your unsweet tea. It's where you literally mix create a mixture of sugar and water and then pour that into the tea that you've boiled so that the sugar and the water and the tea all blend together in a nice fashion. And my kids really resonate with that analogy. They were like, oh yeah, we get that. Because we know about sweet tea down here. So, and I told them, I said, by the end of the semester, I'll bring in some, we'll figure out how to make sweet tea in the classroom. I don't have an oven with a heat. You would have to have an eye to, or a burner to make it work with the analogy, but I'm gonna figure out a way to do it with my students. But yeah, that's what I'm doing. Also, I have an online course that goes with my book, The Playful Classroom. Julie Jones and I wrote a course that goes with that. It's through the website Advancement Courses.
Okay.
And it can be a graduate level course or it can be a continuing ed course, whichever one you decide. And I facilitate that along with Julie. And believe it or not, that keeps us very busy because it's open enrollment. You can just sign up at any time. So it's not like we run semester to semester. So we're getting new students every single day.
Oh, wow.
And we start the process all over again. And of course, the all the content for that course is built. So it's not like I'm live all the time, but I'm engaging with the students nonstop in that course. So, and then when I'm not doing that, I do consulting work with both my books. And I do fun podcasts like this. And sometimes I go to the wine bar and write during the middle of the day, whatever's got going on.
Sounds like a pretty nice existence.
It works from time to time. Yeah. Sometimes they're really stressful. Like the past couple of weeks have been stressful because schools that I was going to work with or events that I was going to work with had to cancel because of the uptick in COVID. Hopefully by the time people listen to this podcast in June, I sure hope we are on the downside, fingers crossed, toes crossed. Lord, I'll even braid my nose hairs crossed, whatever it takes, whatever it takes to get us through this. I'm hopeful that it will be.
You're willing to do your part. It sounds like
I'm doing my part. Yeah. I'm willing to do it. Yeah.
So the book that we're going to talk about today is definitely different than the book that we talked about previously, which was The Playful Classroom. And this was The Courageous Classroom.
Yeah.
So you can you kind of like give us a little insight into what The Courageous Classroom is all about?
Yeah. So officially, The Courageous Classroom is a deep dive into understanding what happens in our bodies, in our minds when we face fear and trauma, when students have to face racism or homophobia or xenophobia, what happens when they deal with microaggressions or abuse at home, and how that affects their learning. But also a portion of the book is talks about how that also affects teachers and how teachers often come to the classroom with their own trauma from their childhood, trauma from their marriages, trauma from their extended family, what may be going on in the world may add trauma to them. And yet we're expected to put on a face, act like nothing's wrong, teach the children all while inside internal trauma is raging. And so there's a portion of that. I wrote it with an amazing human being named Dr. Janet Taylor. She's a psychiatrist from Florida. People who watch podcasts may have heard of her. She's called Dr. Janet. She frequently is a special guest commentator on Good Morning America or the CBS Morning Show. How when they have a story where they need to, they'll do a story and then they need some expert analysis.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll turn to Dr. Janet and, you know, ask her thoughts and opinions. It's kind of an amazing story how I got connected with her. I was literally floating in my sister's pool in July of 2020. And the publishers from Wiley called and said, hey, we think you'd be a good fit to write with this author from Florida. And they pitched me what the book was about. I didn't have any say in the formation of the original plan of the book. They just said, you are a great storyteller and they need a teacher voice. And we think that you have some great stories that could add to the work of this book. And I'll be honest with you, it was mid to July and I was in the pool. I'd had a few drinks, right? And I said, all right, well, just connect me with Dr. Janet and we'll go from there. Well, Dr. Janet was ready to talk right then. And I was like, okay. So I FaceTimed Dr. Janet from the pool and we just hit it off. We just hit it off. And we wrote the entire book. I've never even met her in person.
Wow.
We wrote the entire book via Zoom. Have y'all ever met in person?
Yeah, we teach
in the same school. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure.
Joe was my mentor teacher when I started.
Oh, okay. It seems like we talked about that. I forgot.
And you are probably the fifth author that we've talked to that has co-authored a book and never really been face-to-face you know, lives in totally different states. Like, it's wild.
I try to imagine how people co-authored a book before there was a, a Google Drive. You know, where you could get on a Google Doc and in real time watch each other type. I don't know how people did it. I mean, I guess before that, you could save a Word doc and send it and send it back and forth. But what did we do before that?
Right. Typing a manuscript.
I can't even fathom how difficult.
Exchanging notes and having to read someone else's chicken scratch.
Yeah, it's a nightmare to even think about. But we wrote this book and it came out in the summer of 21. And y'all asked me earlier, you know, why this book compared to The Playful Classroom? They're so different and they are very different. The Courageous Classroom is very heavy. There are stories in there that about my students and the trauma that they've experienced and how I handled it, whether I handled it correctly or incorrectly. There's sections of the book where I literally was sitting in my comfy chair here on the Google chat with Dr. Janet. And it felt like I was in therapy because I would read her the story or recant the story or retell the story. And I would say, I'm not sure that I handled this the right way, but this is what I did because that's all I knew to do. Because here's the heart of this book is that this has got to start conversations about teachers have got to be better trained in how to deal with students of trauma. And what trauma does to the learning and how it affects every aspect of our lives, because we're not trained in that. Nowhere in our college pre-service programs are we really doing a deep dive into that. And our students are coming to us with so many just horrible things that have happened in their lives. And we need to know how to not make more trouble, because a lot of times the things that we do as teachers create more trauma. And then trauma upon trauma upon trauma, it really has a lasting negative effect on the students. And so it was just a book I felt very passionate about. I went through some trauma-informed training a couple of years ago. I've been reading and learning about, you know, how to be better as a trauma-informed teacher and how not to create more. I've dug into lessons from my own life. In the book, I talk about some physical, emotional, and sexual abuse that I faced as a kid. I talked about a really crazy incident that happened when I was in junior high that I still cannot believe happened to this day. I was chased into a bathroom where this guy chased me into the bathroom. He didn't like me. He was calling me a fag and all these things. And I ran into the stall in the bathroom, locked myself in there, and he crawled under the stall to come in after me. When he crawled in one side, I crawled out the other and I ran I ran out right outside the bathroom door was a busy intersection where our assistant principal was, or the assistant principal or our building principal. I can't remember what his official title was at that time, but I went up to him and I said, this is what's happened. I was crying. I was upset. And he said, well, you need to get yourself together, son, or he's going to be out here after you. Oh. And then he said these words. I'll never, ever forget. He said, the only thing I know to tell you is to bring a ball bat to school and keep it in your locker. Oh, the assistant principal. That's what he told me, y'all. And you know what? I would love to say that was back in the 90s. But we are in 2022, and I know that there's some good old boy principals out there that would say the same thing to a homosexual young man who's in middle school and doesn't follow the norms of society. You know, I know that that's still happening because I hear stories about it.
Right.
And so this book was very, very much a passion of mine to put a voice out there into the world where people would read these stories and think about how they're approaching their students and maybe how they're hurting them more than they realize.
It made me just reflect a little bit, just your story there, because, you know, I teach third grade to eighth grade, and you'll have sometimes like kids start crying mm-hmm. in the middle of class. And you know, to the naked eye, I guess, mm-hmm. crying for no reason or, mm-hmm. you know, not something that you can see.
Right.
You know, and I'll say, all right, man, you need to step out of the classroom and just get yourself together before you come back. And I start to wonder now, like, is that the best thing that I should be doing?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not kind of addressing, like, why are you that upset?
You know, it never hurts to ask another human, how can I help?
Right.
You know, the thing that I think we as teachers often do is we're not comfortable being uncomfortable. We want everybody to be comforted in our space. And sometimes you've got to lean into that uncomfort a little bit.
Right.
I remember my very first year teaching, I was in first grade. And a student that I taught at the time came to the school. And this wasn't anything that was very uncommon. His dog had passed away the night before. And he was terribly upset, could not function at school that day. It was obviously weighing on him, and it began to affect the whole class. And so I could have said, hey, dry it up, let's move on. Or I could have sent him to the nurse, called his mom. But what I did is I called him over to the carpet. He sat in my lap. The students joined us on the carpet, and we read a couple of stories about dogs. And we talked about dogs, and we talked about how much we love dogs and what they meant to us. And people shared stories about their dogs and their pets. And we talked about what we knew about death. And I said, you know, when somebody love dies, what do we do? And a couple of kids said, you look at their dead body, you know, because they had been to a funeral home or something. And I said, you know, yeah. I said, we give each other hugs and we tell them we're sorry. You know, and sometimes we line up, you know, and there was a kid. Yeah. When my papa died, you know, it brings it all full circle. And I said, you know, I said, our friend here is hurting. I said, why don't we do for him what we do for other people that we love and care for? And he stood at the front of the room. After I gave him a little bit of time where he could just, believe it or not, that year I just happened to have a basket of stuffed animals that students could read with, and they were all dogs. So everybody got a pet dog and went to their seat, and they wrote him little letters or drew him pictures. And I said he could do whatever he wanted. He could read, lay on the floor, and I just stopped the whole class. And then afterwards, they lined up and brought him the cards. And some of them drew flowers. I mean, it was one of those moments I'll never forget as a teacher. It was a magical moment. And I could have said, let's, we got things to do. I got to teach y'all how to read today.
Right. I got a curriculum to.
Yeah. But what I did is I taught them how to human that day.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a big component that's missing for lots of reasons. I get it. It's teachers are, you know, we've got our curriculum. We've got to keep moving. We've got the test. I think teachers are afraid to buck that, but I also think teachers are afraid to invite that uncomfortableness in their classrooms. And that's what this book is about, embracing that a little bit.
Don't you think that's how that idea could be connected? That's how I feel the two books are connected, because you took that point in the game to have a playful classroom. And I've been thinking, like, because we definitely, have been playing more in the classroom and surprisingly getting more work done.
Yes.
But you know, I'm starting to think like, what's the different type of play? And it's not necessarily, you know, there is different types of play, but it doesn't have to be based around the lesson you're on. It could just be like having, I guess, that flexible system to get the kids what they need at that point in the game. And in that first grade situation, right, with a bunch of first grade students, that's what needed to be done. So to me, that is a playful classroom when you can take that option and say, you know what, we're not going to work on reading today. We just call it, we're going to work on being human.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? I love that.
To me, that's intentional play. And I didn't mean to cut you off. I know.
No.
Sometimes you have to cut you off because.
I know. I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did because you made a good point.
You know,
that the playful classroom, like this in the playful classroom, we talk a lot about spontaneity and getting lost in the flow. That's exactly what happened once the idea of the funeral or the mortuary, the receiving of friends developed in my classroom, I went with it. I embraced that moment. And the playful classroom, it doesn't always look like a game or an art project. Years after, I'm sure they look back on that and think of it as, you know, that was a really unique time in a classroom. But it definitely was the ideals of a playful classroom. You also make an interesting point about how they're connected. I have said many times that if I were going back in time and doing this again, I would have written The Courageous Classroom first. And the answer for The Courageous Classroom is The Playful Classroom. That's how I see it, because The Playful Classroom is what heals the trauma that we're developing in a courageous classroom. And we call it Courageous Classroom because it does take courage to face these things. It takes courage to talk about trauma and to work through it. It takes courage to talk about racism and homophobia. Y'all know I live in the South, and we're very well known down here for being racist and homophobic. It takes courage to talk about those things in our settings, because you're going to get pushback. You're going to get, we laughed about the hate mail about, you know, Ted Lasso. I can sell you some real sweet mail that I've gotten about far more serious things. And so it does take courage. But the two, I'm glad you pointed that out. They're very much interwoven. And I'm glad you saw that.
Yeah. And it takes a lot more courage for you than it does for us. I mean, Ron and I work in a pretty great district, and they're very supportive. Now, there's still parents within that district where there's fight back.
Yeah.
But I think we've definitely talked about all of those issues as a class, as a district, and trying to start address them.
You said a good word when you said start. I have this little box of like inspirational quotes that somebody got me from Target, and it sits on a shelf in my bathroom. And when I'm waiting on the water to heat up for the shower, I'll flip a new one every morning, you know. See what word of wisdom I got as I'm standing there waiting, you know, use the time wisely.
Yeah.
And several months ago, I flipped one over and it said, start by starting. And of all people, it was a quote by Meryl Streep. I don't think of her as someone that I would quote often. Like, in this box, there are quotes from like Mother Teresa and Gandhi, world leaders. And then all of a sudden Meryl Streep pops up and I'm like, okay. But if a particular quote really impacts me, I leave it for a while. And I have not been able to change that quote from start by starting in quite a while. It's in there right now in my bathroom. And it constantly resonates in my brain. Start by starting, start by starting. You're afraid to talk about racism. Start by starting. You're afraid to have these conversations about all these XYZs because it's uncomfortable. Start by starting. You know, the first step is the hardest in every journey. I ran 7 marathons, and the hardest part of every marathon I ever did was getting out of bed that morning. The race was easy. Once I got there and got going, piece of cake. But getting up, the mental battle, you know, fighting that thing. And so start by starting, it really resonates with me. I hope somebody out there hears that and writes it down somewhere.
We do quotes every day. And we have a lot of students that are anxious. And I talk about being anxious in class because I want them to know, like, listen, guys, I'm here today. Even though when I got up, I was like, oh my God, I don't feel good. I don't want to go in today.
Yeah.
But I started thinking about you guys. and that, you know what, I'm showing up for you. So I might not tell them tomorrow that quote was from Meryl Streep, which they might not know who she is anyway.
They probably tell them, maybe they know The Devil Wears Prada. I don't know, but that's still, that was still an old movie. It's an old movie now, so I don't know.
Well, even, you know, to like, right, like sometimes you just get out of bed and start going, because I always tell them by the time I get there, I feel a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, so whether it's the marathon or even if you're wrapped up around the craziness of that, what's going on.
You don't ever know which direction things are going to go, which step you're going to have to take until you start. And then when you start, you figure it out as you go. Look, 3 years ago, I can't believe it's been 3 years ago now, when I was starting to transition into mostly independent work. I say independent work, but I've got, you know, I'm still connected to my adjunct work and my courses, but mostly the work that I do is, you know, a gig economy. And I started that 5 months before COVID began. And then all 5 months in, here's COVID flipping everything upside down. But every day I had to start by starting, figure out what to do next. And I would have never done that if I'd have just laid there and felt sorry for myself, you know? And I think that's the heart of the courageous classroom, is that teachers need to starting to embrace that discomfort that they may feel. In the book, we talk about your ACEs score. I don't know if you are familiar with that. It's basically when you go through, and I know ACEs stand for something, and I just lost it when I said ACEs. But it's basically where you go through and evaluate your own life and examine traumatic events that maybe you have in your own life. And you score 1 point for each kind of thing. Like if your parents were divorced, if a parent had ever been incarcerated, if a parent had ever died, or if a parent had ever abused you or something, like, you know, traumatic events that we face as children. And, you know, the average teacher that I've met around here, is scores a 1 or 2, but they teach kids with a 9 or a 10, 10 being the highest that you can have. And so there's this wide gap between their lived experience and the student's lived experience, and they have no training on how to deal with it. They're teaching students that in their mind have the same lived experience as they do. And that's just not true. A classic example. If you go into an elementary classroom and you see at Christmas time, you see a well-decorated Christmas tree and stockings and gingerbread houses. And what's happening there is teachers bringing in their holiday experiences, whereas some of that could be foreign to those students, that they have no idea the connection. And they're maybe overstepping their bounds a little bit. And I know I don't want to touch on Christmas, and I don't want to get hate mail about Christmas, because I'm not hating on Christmas. I'm just using that as an example. There's other things. An example from my own life. There was a student that I had years and years ago in first grade, and I had them write about if they could go anywhere in the world, where would they go? And now I was a rookie teacher at that time. I think it was my second year. And I didn't do a lot of background building like I should. I think I showed them a picture of Disney World and you know, maybe a picture of Hawaii. And in my mind, I just assumed that they had some lofty place that they'd like to go, you know? And this little girl that I had, she wrote about, so let me set it up. Our school was on the north side of a traffic circle, okay? On the north side of the traffic circle. And it was very impoverished on that north side. Lots of, you know, sort of dilapidated housing. And her parents worked at a little small boutique bodega kind of grocery store. And her life consisted of that grocery store and the school and their trailer that they lived in right near the school. And that was it. Those are the only three places she went. And so when she said anywhere she could go, she wanted to go to the other side of the traffic circle to see what was over there. Y'all, that changed my life. That was 20 years ago. And I have never forgotten it, that student just wanted to go on the other side of that circle. I had showed her pictures of Disney World and of Hawaii. And even she couldn't relate to those things because they were so foreign to her. She wanted to go to the other side of the circle. You know, and I never will forget it. And I wish that I could have been a different teacher. I wish I could have read a book like this before I maybe even caused more trauma in her life. She didn't even know she had trauma. And I probably caused some because.
But don't you think instead of trauma, you like opening up perspectives?
Well, I like to think that I did, but you know, I think back to some of our peers, you know, saying like, I want to go visit my grandma who lives in the mountains. And she has a ski place nearby. You know, I just think about how she might have felt when, you know, not that we don't know all the different ways that that might go for a student, but I think about that a lot, how I could have done that differently. I don't know to this day, still how I could have done that differently. Maybe picked a little more inclusive topic. You know, what would you like to eat for lunch? I don't know. You know, it was been the same thing. Far as the outcome.
That, like you said, I did the ACEs score is adverse childhood experiences.
Thank you. Adverse. I couldn't think of the A.
But I mean, you brought up a great point of most teachers on that ACEs score are like that, maybe one, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring that perspective in because, I mean, that's even I didn't start teaching until I was 40. Even that, mm-hmm. I brought my perspective in, and it was a third grade classroom, and a child was upset, and I pull him out into the hallway to find out why, and he's talking about because my mom's boyfriend beat her up last night, and he threatened her with a gun, and I know he has a gun, and I'm like,
mentor.
What am I supposed to do?
Mentor.
Yeah.
Like, right? Yeah, I'm like, Joe, you're my mentor, so.
Yeah. And see, look, and the thing about that is that in most schools, you would be told that, number one, you're a mandatory reporter and that needs to be reported. But number two, oh, you better hand that to the guidance counselor. Well, in this age that we live in, the guidance counselor is administrating tests to the building. The guidance counselor is overworked because there's 50 of those students with the same story in that building.
Well, and even as his mentor, what was I? I might have been a 10-year teacher at that point. Yeah. So, and yeah, still with nothing, you know, yeah, in my bag of tricks to even address that. Even the multiple times Ron came to me and said, yo, what do I do with this?
I had a student who had been molested by her father and her grandfather. And they brought her to my classroom just literally the day after she was removed from the home. That poor child, she needed lots and lots of therapy before she should have even been in a classroom. But then they put her with a man teacher. Oh, you know,
right.
And now I will tell you that story had a happy ending for me and her. She bonded with me and I hope that wherever she is, I don't know where she is to this day because she moved away, but I hope that, you know, I gave her some fond memories of a man teacher. Right. In a positive memory, you know, but I write about her. We wrote about her in the book. And I asked some questions to Dr. Janet, you know, what did I cause more trauma or what could I have done differently? You know, you'll have to read the whole thing to learn more about it. But I think about her a lot. You know, I hope I didn't cause any more trauma, but I don't think I did because when she left, we had a great relationship. She was just a sweetheart of a student. I've tried to find her on social media and cannot find her. Don't know where she is because I don't really know what last name she had, because I think the name that she had when I had her was not her real last name. So I don't even know how to find her. I can't find her. I don't know. But the reason I mentioned her was because of what you said about, you know, you didn't know how to handle that student who had been, you know, saw his mom. Now, I will tell you, I was a victim of domestic violence as a kid multiple times, right? I could have related to that kid. I have been in a home where a gun was pulled, you know, on my mother. And so I relate to that. I'm very open. You're not really supposed to be talking about your ACE score or whatever, but just to put it in a perspective, I scored a 9, whereas a lot of the teachers I know scored, you know, 2 or 3. And that's not something that I'm proud of. It's my lived experience. So I'm acknowledging that because I think it helps to understand the perspective of why this book was a little, was more than just a book. It was a passion for me to get this out. So I was really excited that, you know, the publishers asked me to do it.
That book and a study of that book should be undergraduate requirement.
I love that.
Or something similar, you know what I mean? Like,
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. The book needs to, you know, if someone chose to do that with this book, it would be fantastic. But whatever they, whatever colleges or universities decide to do in that kind of training, I hope that they will train their staff, not just the one professor who teaches the course, but everybody in that education department needs to be aware. Everybody that works in any district needs to be aware. I mean, if you're just the person who answers the phone at the district office, like you need to know
the lunch lady.
You need to know who is going to be on the other end of that phone and what they might be bringing in that conversation, because everybody's not have your lived experience and you can't speak to everybody in the same way. You just can't do it. So, yeah. Anyway, I know that's probably heavier than what y'all expected. You know, because my last book, was all about play and the power of play. And this one does feel a lot heavier, but it's definitely a topic that needs to be out there.
Well, and I think we were all dealing with these kind of traumas prior to COVID.
Yep.
And now you have students who may not have had those traumas previously, but now have trauma. And you have the students who had that trauma with more trauma on top of it.
We better start talking about just the actual trauma all of us have been through during this pandemic. For those first 3-4 months, I didn't even leave my neighborhood. We didn't know what was happening. I told you I was a big Walking Dead fan. Matt and I were ready. We didn't know. we had food. We knew where the machete was so we could, take care of ourselves. We didn't know. We didn't know if the grid was about to collapse. I'll tell you, the first few mornings of after everything shut down and it felt like things were getting tense, I would wake up and the first thing I would do every morning, I would log on to the news app to see if a city had fallen.
Right.
And that was, I'm saying that actual was a thought that I considered. If a city fell, then what city would fall next? I felt like it'd be like dominoes. Right, If we woke up and Los Angeles had fallen and people were mass hysteria, that would have trickled across this country like wildfire. You know what? And it was a real fear. And the trauma of that, I'm still not over it. I'm still looking at the apps. People were on edge. They're still on edge. It's very evident because it's seeping into every, people are outraged right now that districts are e-learning because of the snow. 2 years ago, nobody was outraged about that. I mean, there's always one or two, that has something snarky to say. But man, it's become a fault line. You either want school to be in person or you want it to be on e-learning during the snow, for crying out loud.
So we're working in our social studies curriculum on different types of government, and mm-hmm. we're focusing on democracy, monarchy, and a dictatorship. So we talked about all three today, and we threw it out to the kids. Like, my question was like that, the ending question to close the day, given the choice, which government would you want to be a citizen in? And, one kid's like, a dictatorship. I'm like, really? Why? He goes, because I could run everything. I said, no. You don't get to be the dictator. You get to be a citizen. Yeah, citizen. And then, the thought came, but everyone else, either democracy or a monarchy, the people that picked monarchy, the one that got me the most, he said, because then no one's fighting on everything. No one's fighting over this guy's wants this or that guy wants that, or like, you vote for this guy, so I don't like you because I want to vote for this guy. 8 years old, this kid came up with this. And I thought, that's a problem. You should be so proud of having that choice.
Having a choice. Yeah.
But he's like, and it shook me,
But what? As I think about child psychology and I think about what they have seen growing up, your kids are what, 8, 9 years old?
8, 9.
So they've lived in this era of political divide.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably mentally exhausted of what's going on. We all are.
Right.
The trauma of what all of this is affecting everything. And the kid has even said, I would rather them just tell me who the boss is going to be, because they inherited that position, than all this fighting, and that's again, it's, we need to start thinking about how trauma has affected us. And it's a powerful book, I think. And I hope people will read it, and I hope it will impact their classroom pedagogy. Yeah.
And I like that you put teachers in there about what the trauma teachers have, because I think I think it was Bobby Down. She's a administrator from this area, and she's big into trauma-informed classrooms and mindfulness. And she said, we don't even realize, she was on the podcast before, we don't realize the level of trauma we're carrying.
Yeah.
Because we've walked around looking at each other as a biological weapon
for
years, you know, over a year, 2 years now.
Yeah.
And you don't even think about it anymore.
Yeah.
That you don't touch this door without this, or I just shook somebody's hand, I got to go hand sanitize right away.
Yeah.
Or, like,
even now I'm thinking, I've touched my face probably 100 times during this whole call. Right. When's the last time I washed my hands? Right. You know,
I touch somebody's hand before that? Yeah. Or
then you're in front of the kids, right? And none of that can come through. So to go home at the end of the day and just be like spent.
And I'll say this, it's not just teachers. I mean, teachers are definitely facing the front lines of it, but all the kids that we teach, their parents are going through it. And I'll tell you something, college students are dealing with this in a way that nobody's talking about.
Yeah.
They are literally trying to train for their future careers in a moment of our world history that they have so much uncertainty. They don't even know how to, you know, and so much of the ways that we were trained and went through, they can't do those things right now.
My friend's daughter is a freshman. She just got back last week after having to not come back for like 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Second day back, her grandmother dies.
Mm.
She's furious, not because her grandmother dies, now because she has to leave school, go do all this BS, and now come, and I'm like, where's our thinking? Like,
I know. This is where we are.
Like,
where we are. Right.
She goes,
I'm gonna bring it home for us, which is why we're writing the next book. And I'm writing a third book with I'm back with Julie Jones, Dr. Julie Jones, who wrote The Playful Classroom with me. We're writing a book called The Playful Life. And it is a book for all people, not educators, not just anybody in the, you know, education field. It is how play is going to heal us and help bring us through this trauma. And we want to show everyone how in inviting playfulness into our lives in as many nooks and crannies as we can get it into, it will transform our minds, because when we play, there's all these chemicals that are released in our brains, catecholamines, anandamide, norepinephrine, dopamine, you know, all of those feel serotonin. Hey, have I told you about serotonin before? You know what serotonin helps you do? Have we talked about this?
You get poop.
Yes. Look. Yes.
I remember.
You get an A. Yes. Serotonin helps you poop. I swear, if we were all just regular poopers, we'd be better. We'd be better. We'd be in a better mood. Joe, that you know you'd feel better.
This episode.
Listen, look, I am very regular. I'm pooping this, 3 times a day. I'm all good.
Me too. I'm very regular. I take my fiber. I do all the things. But think about how when you're not, okay? You're grumpy. You're in a mood. You're uncomfortable. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Look, every time we've laughed today, I know that serotonin is just flooding my body. I'm meeting some people for dinner in just a little bit. I'm going to have to swing by the restroom on the way out, all this serotonin. But the point in that is that we have become so high strung as a society. We've become so focused on work and success and defining it as work, 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 and money, money, money. And I don't want to sound like a TV preacher or one of those hokey, you know, feel good speakers, you know. We've got to embrace more playfulness in our lives, and our bodies are wired to respond to it in a healthy way. And that's why this next book is so important. It's our manuscript's due March the 1st. So when people listen to this, it'll already be in the works. And it's supposed to release October of 2022 by the end of the month, hopefully around Halloween.
Maybe we can have Joy on, maybe sometime in the summer.
Yes. I would love that. Julie would love that. I think y'all would love her. Our relationship is very much like a brother and sister. We have some bickering and bantering, quite often, which is how we wrote our first book. And I think we would be great for your podcast. So bring us back on.
Well, we know you got to run, so and you probably have to use the bathroom on the way out.
I do. I do.
We just want it's always like, again, like I'm smiling ear to ear. My mouth hurts a little bit from smiling. So, I mean, it's a good time.
I even see a little bit of like red getting up on head in the baldy spot there. Yeah.
So yeah, thank you so much.
Wait, let me ask this. You think, so when people listen, they just listen, they're not seeing us, are they?
Sometimes.
You'll put some clips on YouTube.
Okay. Well, be sure when I said, you know, baldy, you know, be sure to show everybody how much hair he's got on his chin. It's just misplaced.
It's in the wrong spot. That's all.
That's okay. It's okay. I love it. I love it so much. Thanks for having me on.
Teacher nerds, knocking on your door. Open up, let's take your teaching further than before. Give it a try, don't be shy, there's nothing there to lose. Worst thing that happens, kids get pain on their shoes. We're talking teacher nerds, I'm talking teacher.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Teacher Nerds Podcast. Keep up with every new episode by subscribing on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, Anchor, or anywhere you listen. When you subscribe, be sure to give us a review and tell a friend. Visit us at teachernerds.com. Follow us on Twitter at teachernerds, on Instagram at teachernerdspodcast, or email us teachernerds@gmail.com. And remember, we're nerds with a Z. Most importantly, thank you for listening and becoming one of the Teacher Nerds.